Funding for this talk comes from TrialX, connecting patients to clinical trials.
Good evening and welcome to Cure Talks. This is Pia Menon joining you from India on Cure Talks 121st episode. And today we are discussing non-secretory multiple myeloma, new options in assessment and treatment. My co-host for the talk is myeloma advocate and editor of MyelomaSurvival.com, Gary Peterson. Joining Gary on the panel is myeloma advocate Jack Aylo. Due to unforeseen circumstances, our panelist Alec Biro is unable to join us today, and we regret this. The hallmark of most multiple myeloma cases is a persistent production of some form of immunoglobulins, a phenomena that brings the disease to attention. However, there is a subset of multiple myeloma patients who do not secrete these immunoglobulins or its component parts into either the blood or urine, hence called non-secretory myeloma. Some non-secretory myeloma patients may produce immunoglobulin proteins, but they have defects in secretion. Due to lack of these protein biomarkers in blood and urine, it may be difficult to assess and treat the disease. Today, we are talking to Dr. Fritz Van Rie of UAMS about latest developments and new options available in assessment and treatment of non-secretory myeloma. Dr. Van Rie, welcome to Cure Talks. It's a pleasure to have you with us again.
Well, thank you very much for inviting me, and it's a pleasure to be here.
I will be now handing over to Gary, who will begin with the discussion. And before that, I would like to inform our listeners that we will be addressing questions sent in via email and posted on the website. So if you have a question for our panel, please email it to priya@trialx.com, or you can also post it on the Cure Talks website. With that, I hand over to Gary to introduce our expert and begin with the discussion. Gary, you're on air.
Yes, thank you, Priya, and thanks to TrialX for bringing us this great forum for myeloma patients. Dr. Van Rie is a professor of medicine in the College of Medicine's Department of Internal Medicine. He is also the Director of Development and Translational Medicine at UAMS Myeloma Institute. He earned his medical degree in Rotterdam, Netherlands, and his PhD at the University of London. He's trained in internal medicine and hematology in the UK and in bone marrow transportation at John Radcliffe University Hospital in Oxford and in Royal Postgraduate Medical School in London. He is a fellow in the American College of Physicians. At UIMS, he holds the Charles and Clydeen Charlau Chair for Hematology Malignancies, and prior to joining UIMS, Dr. Van Rie was an Associate Professor of Medicine and Director of Cellular Immunotherapy and Translational Research at the University of South Carolina, and a fellow at the National Heart, Blood, and Lung Institute at the National Institute of Health in Bethesda, Maryland. Van Rie treats patients with multiple myeloma and related hematologic malignancies. He is also considered an international expert on Castleman's disease. And I think and he also has many other affiliations as well. But one thing I wanted to say is that his work in both myeloma and in Castleman's have been rewarded. And specifically in Castleman's, he was awarded the Castleman's Disease Warrior Award for Best Physicians of the Year by the Castleman's Disease Coordinating Network, which is a CDCN. So if you think myeloma is a orphan disease with 30,000 or so newly diagnosed, Castleman's is just 75 to 8,000. So Dr. Van Rie goes for the hard things. But one thing I wanted to say is that it's not only what he knows, but who he is. And presenting the award to Dr. Van Rie was Dr. Feigenbaum, MD, MBA, and an associate professor of medicine in the Division of Translational Medicine and Human Genomics at the University of Pennsylvania, and co-founder and executive director of the Castleman CDCN, which he says, and I think this is important, Dr. Van Rie has been the leader in the field of Castleman disease for over a decade. I feel incredibly fortunate to have Dr. Van Rie as my doctor, as a patient. He saved my life 3 times. And as a fellow medical professional, I can say with 100% certainty that I have never met or interacted with another physician that is anything like Dr. Van Rie. He is the ultimate care provider and the ultimate doctor. So when you have that kind of glowing referral from the head of the CDC and also who trusts his care to Dr. Van Rie, I think it says a lot. So thank you, Dr. Van Rie, for coming with us today, and I hope I didn't embarrass you with that embellishment.
No, thank you very much for your kind words, and I'm very grateful for all your very generous compliments.
Thank you, Doctor. First off, you know, I'm not sure everybody really understands what a non-secretory myeloma is, and if you could please explain what non-secretory myeloma is and why it is different from the majority of myeloma for the audience.
Myeloma, as Priya already so eloquently pointed out, is a cancer of plasma cells, and the job under normal circumstances of plasma cells is to make antibodies. And then they become cancerous, they start to make one specific antibody, which we refer to as the M-spike, the myeloma protein. And this antibody can be measured in the peripheral blood and also in the urine, and it can be used as a surrogate for response. So it's a very convenient way of monitoring and detecting the disease. Now, about 1 to 2% of patients do not produce the myeloma protein, or at least it's not present in the peripheral blood. So the criteria for diagnosing non-secretory multiple myeloma is that you should not have a myeloma protein detectable in the peripheral blood. Also, some patients make part of the myeloma protein, which is called the light chain. An antibody molecule consists of a heavy chain and then a light chain. So there's now also a serum-free light chain assay, and that assay needs to be negative as well. So you should not produce both the M protein and the light chain in the peripheral blood. And lastly, a 24-hour urine should be negative. In other words, you should not detect any abnormal protein by protein electrophoresis in a urine sample. So in essence, you lose one marker of your disease, and that is the myeloma protein. Now, as such, there are two reasons why patients don't have myeloma protein or light chains in the peripheral blood. The first reason, which is quite rare, is that the myeloma cells are not producing it. The second reason, and that's much more common, is that the myeloma cells are actually still producing these proteins, but they're not excreting it into the peripheral blood. So that's the most common cause of so-called non-secretory multiple myeloma.
Okay. Now, if you don't have these markers, you know, that we would, you know, they would say you have high urine. That's why we're going to check further, and you have, you know, high protein in your urine, and you've got protein in your serum, in your blood, and that's how we find, you know, this stuff. So how can we find it before it, you know, if you can't see it the kind of the normal way? How do you find it before it's out of control or in stage three? How does it present itself so people know that they have myeloma, or do not people who get non-secretory myeloma usually end up, at the end of their rope?
Well, it is true that you will lose an important marker to detect the disease. In some patients, diagnosis can be delayed. Obviously, myeloma can cause anemia. It can cause problems with the bones, sometimes fractures in the spine or in the long bones. It can cause high calcium and sometimes also abnormal renal function, kidney function. And these findings can prompt searching for the myeloma protein, which obviously would be negative in this group of patients. But then a bone marrow biopsy or a biopsy of an abnormal area in the skeleton can lead to the diagnosis. In terms of staging and looking at the ISS, the international staging criteria, actually stage 3 is less frequently present in non-secretory myeloma. The main reason for that is that these patients are not producing the myeloma protein, and it can therefore not affect the kidney. So there is no kidney impairment. And if you have abnormal renal function, then one of the other markers for myeloma, which is called the beta-2M or the beta-2 microglobulin, is not elevated, and that's an important marker used in the staging system to define stage 3. These patients have a high beta-2M or beta-2 microglobulin. Obviously, there are some advantages to not having the myeloma protein circulating as well, since these patients don't develop organ damage due to deposition of light chains, for instance, in the kidney or in the heart as amyloid or light chain deposition disease. Furthermore, the whole myeloma protein in some patients can be very high and make the blood sticky or viscous, something we call as hyperviscosity syndrome. And that is something which also does not occur in patients with non-secretory myeloma. So there are some advantages to not having this protein circulating, but it certainly can delay diagnosis, and you lose an important marker for monitoring the disease.
I know that we had one of our panel members, Pat Killingsworth. I'm sure you've heard of Pat. And Pat was a non-secretor. And he, we unfortunately lost him not that, well, but a little over a year ago. That was one of his problems. He couldn't, he had no M spike. He had no light chains that were out of whack. He had a very low plasma cells in his bone marrow, but he did even at 0.4, he would have terrible bone pain and bone destruction. So I was wondering, do you find that non-secretors tend to be found because of bone destruction?
Yeah, I think that is a more common presentation in non-secretory myeloma, that the disease is found as a result of problems with the bones. Another possible presentation, obviously, as a result of that is a high calcium, which can make patients confused. And obviously, if the bone marrow is more heavily infiltrated, anemia can occur.
Okay, so you can have anemia as well. All right, so there's some advantages to non-secretory myeloma, and that is that, you don't have all these nasty light chains and proteins going through your body messing you up. But on the other hand, it's tougher to find. So given this, I guess that will answer my next point, but maybe not. Maybe you've got another read on that. Is given the fact that given the fact that it's hard to find, and why is the life expectancy of non-secretory myeloma patients half again longer than that for the average myeloma patient? And I mean by that is, I guess, Mayo Clinic had done a retrospective analysis of patients between, I think it was 2001 and 2012, and found that there was, I think it was 8.3-year life expectancy for the non-secretors and 5.4 for the secretors.
So I think one of the important things to realize when you survey the literature, that I would agree that the outcome of patients for non-secretory myeloma certainly doesn't appear to be worse. However, these patients are typically not enrolled on clinical trials because all clinical trials usually stipulate that you need to have a myeloma protein detectable in order to monitor the response. So you're talking about doing analysis retrospectively of patients not treated on a clinical trial. Then the other point to make is that a lot of the published studies include patients who were treated before the free light chain assay became available. And about 60 to 70% of patients who appear non-secretory will have secretion of free light chains when the free light chain assay is used. So some of the patients in these studies, when you look at them, they may actually not truly have non-secretory multiple myeloma. And lastly, because non-secretory myeloma is such a small patient group, in order of 1 to 2% of myeloma patients at diagnosis, you're dealing with very small numbers of patients. The study that you quoted, I think, had 36 patients in it. After 2001. So we have we have data on small numbers of patients, and there are limitations to the data sets. However, it does not appear that these patients do worse than they have non-secretory multiple myeloma at diagnosis.
Okay, well, thank you so much. So the next question is really what all the listeners are here waiting to hear, and that is, what are the latest developments and new options available in assessing and the treatment of non-secretory myeloma?
If you think about myeloma as a disease in which you can monitor certain things, the things that one usually looks at is, one, the myeloma protein and the light chains and the urine, and that's that asset you will lose. Then you're left with looking at the bone marrow and doing imaging studies to look at bone disease, and these become more important in this patient group. So there is more reliance on doing one bone marrow examination and two imaging, and it's become increasingly clear that the skeletal survey, which to some extent for a very long time has been the standard of care for assessment of multiple myeloma patients, perhaps should be replaced by doing MRI or PET scan studies in these patients for monitoring the disease. Then you compare the MRI and the PET scan. The MRI is very good at diagnosis to give you anatomical information. You can see the bone marrow lesions very well on MRI scanning. However, the changes in MRI following treatment are relatively slow. The PET scan is based on the uptake of a sugar-like dye into the myeloma cells, which are alive, and the changes in the PET scan are much more dynamic, much more quickly after treatment. So the changes in the PET scan occur much quicker. This patient group would particularly benefit from monitoring with a PET scan. In terms of treatment, there is as such no evidence to suggest that these patients fare any worse or significantly better than other patients. So they don't really need any different treatment approach. I think the main difference lies in their monitoring of their response to treatment rather than applying different therapy.
So do you do a gene expression profiling on, or is there just not enough secreted or in the bone marrow to really evaluate?
Yeah, the gene expression profiling and sequencing studies do not involve the myeloma protein as such. Usually what is being done is that a bone marrow is being sampled, the myeloma cells are purified, and then the genetic material is extracted and further examined. One test that we do is gene expression profiling, and there are obviously now more sophisticated analyses can be done as well. But you don't need the myeloma protein as such for that, rather the myeloma cells.
Mm-hmm.
And the answer is yes, we do gene expression profiling on our myeloma patients. The gene expression profile, which gives you a molecular picture of the myeloma, is an important prognostic tool. About 85% of patients at diagnosis have low-risk myeloma. In our program, low-risk myeloma doesn't mean little treatment. It means if you're fit and well, a very good outcome with a significant amount of treatment. High-risk myeloma, which 15% of newly diagnosed patients have, is characterized by a higher relapse rate, and we have a different treatment protocol for these patients.
Okay, and what is that treatment protocol? I know that you guys have been working on that for a long time, and really nobody's made much of a breakthrough, I don't believe, on high risk, have they?
Yeah, I think the first point to make is that in the myeloma community at the moment, there is no consensus how to define high risk myeloma. There are different ways to, looking at the myeloma cells at the genetic level. I think we use a very stringent, very strict definition of high-risk myeloma. So in our hands, fewer patients are high-risk perhaps than at other centers. And at the moment, we're incorporating carfilzomib at all phases of the treatment, that is during induction, during the bone marrow, during the stem cell transplantation phase, the consolidation and the maintenance after the transplants. And we try to give our treatments quite close together. We also combine different drugs in order to try and let the drugs work together, rather than give necessarily very high doses of drugs. And we've also started to introduce the new antibody, particularly the Darzalex or the daratumumab antibody.
And that's in what consolidation, induction, consolidation, and maintenance, or where does it go?
We find that in the high-risk patients, as I said, they are characterized by an increase of relapse, which particularly occurs during consolidation and maintenance. And that's where we want to add, that's where we're adding the daratumumab treatment, the Darzalex treatment. That's the antibody treatment.
Oh, okay. So it sounds like there's really, you know, you look at gene expression profiling, determining if there's any anything in that might require a different method of attack. But in general, you've got a pretty good, you believe, idea on how to go after the low-risk population and are working on something else for the high-risk. At this point, I'd like to go on to Jack Iola, and Jack is going to ask his questions. He's going to then ask Yalik's questions, and he promised to try to copy his accent, which I don't know, this is going to be funny, which is Yemeni, I think, and then he'll ask the questions from the callers as well. I've got a little cold, so I'm a little under the weather, but Jack will take over for me. Jack, you there?
I am here.
All right.
So, Dr. Van Rie, I asked my Dutch wife, is your last name pronounced Rie or Ray?
Well,
she wasn't sure.
Say Ray.
Yeah, that's what she thought, too. Okay. So I'll call you Dr. Van Rie, if that's okay.
Thank you very much.
So I'd always heard that there are some myeloma patients that start off as secretors and can become non-secretors. I actually think that's what happened with Pat Killingsworth. And so I wonder if you can confirm that's true, and can it also be vice versa? Can you start off as a non-secretor and become a secretor?
I think it's very important to recognize the difference between non-secretory multiple myeloma at diagnosis and at relapse. At diagnosis, patients seem to have a similar outcome with treatment compared to patients who have secretory myeloma, in which there is a myeloma protein or a light chain detectable. At relapse, what can occur that the patients lose the production of the whole myeloma protein and only start making the light chain. This is referred to as light chain escape. And others can stop producing any myeloma protein altogether or only produce very little of it. And this usually means that the disease has changed its nature and is becoming more persistent and in some cases also more aggressive. This is likely occurred because of additional genetic alterations, genetic mutations in the plasma cells, which interfere with the production or the secretion of the myeloma proteins.
So the patient then who thinks they, first of all, they were a secretor and thinks they have achieved a great response from the treatment could actually be misled in thinking those results are good if they've become a non-secretor.
That is correct. And we tend to follow our patients not only by doing myeloma protein assays, which are obviously very important, but we also do at regular intervals a bone marrow examination and imaging studies. So those are the three main modalities that we use to monitor for disease recurrence.
And yeah. I'm sorry, go ahead.
And obviously in cases where patients either have non-secretory myeloma at the onset or where it occurs at relapse, the bone marrow examination and the imaging studies become more important.
Yeah, I'd always heard that patients should get another bone marrow biopsy when they do relapse, but you're saying it's actually more important to get them kind of on a regular basis, even if they are in a good response, just to make sure there are no surprises.
Yes, we obviously bone marrow examinations are unpleasant, and one can't do a bone marrow exam at the drop of a hat. But in general terms, when patients are longer out, we will do at least yearly a bone marrow examination to confirm that there are no myeloma cells detectable, even when the myeloma protein is negative. And that's even more important if the patients are non-secretory.
Yeah. Okay, thank you. I was going to ask you about gene expression profiling, but I think I heard the answers to Gary's questions are that there are really no differences in gene expression profiling between secreting patients and non-secretors. Each patient is different, and there's no, you can't say that, well, if you're a non-secretor, you're more likely to have a more positive gene expression profiling. Is that correct?
So the gene expression profile will tell you more than the risk that the myeloma has of behaving in a bad way. There is no reason to assume that patients with non-secretory myeloma have a worse gene expression profile. However, it is possible that they could belong to different subtypes of myeloma defined by gene expression profiling or other means. And nobody really has looked at that in any systematic fashion. For those of the listeners who are a little bit more in tune with the genetics, there is some inkling perhaps that patients with a translocation 11-14 are more likely to have non-secretory multiple myeloma, but that has never been confirmed or looked at systematically.
Interesting. I have a question with respect to MRD, or minimal residual disease. Is it correct that there is no reason a non-secretory patient shouldn't be able to have MRD testing via flow or sequencing using bone marrow biopsies?
I think MRD testing is increasingly used. And obviously, we do a MRD testing using flow cytometry on all the bone marrows that we procure. The flow cytometry test has some advantage over just doing the biopsy. The biopsies can sometimes be a little patchy. In other words, in some areas there's more myeloma than others, and this flow cytometry test is a useful addition. We know that attaining or becoming MRD negative in the bone marrow is important, and most studies being MRD negative is associated with a better outcome. In our own data set, we find that there's one particular subtype of myeloma where MRD, where becoming MRD negative is probably not that important. Certainly in high-risk myeloma, being MRD negative early on in the treatment program is very important in terms of outcome. what we have not proven, or what has not been proven in the myeloma field as yet, is that altering treatment based on an MRD test will improve your outcome. Although one would intuitively assume that this is that this would be the case, this actually will be studied in future clinical trials and is as yet unproven.
So, but to summarize, MRD testing via a bone marrow biopsy should be just as effective for non-secretory patients as well as secretory?
That's correct.
Okay.
I think it should have the same implication and relevance.
And I know they're studying MRD testing via serum. They don't have it yet to as high a degree of accuracy, but I presume MRD via serum testing would not be effective at all for non-secretors. Is
well,
that true?
No, I don't think that would be the case. The MRD testing in the serum really would look at the DNA, at the genetic material, and there are some advantages to doing that on the serum, because you would sample the whole body, so to speak, not just one site in the bone marrow. But one could imagine that these tests could pick up genetic material coming from a bone lesion in the spine, another bone lesion in the thigh bone, etc. So, in principle, one could get a broader picture, but this type of testing and the correlation with flow cytometry testing in the bone marrow is still very early on, and we don't quite know how this correlates with standard response or MRD testing in the bone marrow. So I think those are very interesting future things to be developed.
You mentioned earlier that because non-secretors don't show an M spike, for example, that they're usually not part of clinical trials, and they don't qualify from an eligibility criteria. If I were a non-secretor, I'd kind of be PO'd at this and would do whatever is possible to get into trials. Are there more trials that might be open to them if the trials set an eligibility criteria as using somehow looking at MRD versus N-spike improvements?
Yes, and obviously efforts are being made to use MRD testing as a surrogate for outcome, and one would hope that that regulatory authorities can embrace this. However, one should also realize that examination of the bone marrow probably does not suffice. I think there is increasing evidence that imaging in multiple myeloma is important. And if we're talking about non-secretory myeloma, we're not only talking about doing bone marrows, but probably also following them by an imaging modality such as CT PET scanning. And obviously, when a company develops a large-scale trial, that would add very considerably to the cost.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Let me ask a couple of questions that Elac Baru posed. He asked, even when non-circulatory, can myeloma patients still experience common myeloma symptoms such as bone lesions, renal failures, and can they still be typed as IgG or IgA and whatever kappa and lambda light change? And I'm thinking the answers are probably yes and no to those two questions, but Can you clarify?
So again, there are two reasons why a patient doesn't secrete the myeloma protein into the blood or the urine. One is it's not produced at all by the myeloma cells. We call that a non-producing myeloma, and that's a very rare entity. The more common thing is that the myeloma proteins are still being made in the cell, in the myeloma cell, but they are not being churned out into the bloodstream. So you can actually stain the myeloma cells and look for the light chains and look for the IgG or IgA. So it's possible to characterize them that way, although that is not routinely done, but it's in principle certainly feasible.
And a non-secretory patient can still have bone lesions and renal failures and things like that?
Now, renal failure is obviously less common because these abnormal proteins are not circulating and cannot damage the kidney. So renal failure is less frequent, but they can certainly have bone lesions. And that is very well described in the literature, that it is in fact quite frequent in non-secretory myeloma.
Okay. And I think ELAC asked a really interesting question here. He says if imaging tests such as PET-CTs are the ones that are more effective to monitor non-secretory myeloma, are you aware of any special considerations by insurance companies or Medicare to pay for more PET and CT or imaging studies if a patient is non-secretory?
No, I'm also not. The only thing one can do is try to convince the insurance company that it's important in this particular patient, since one of the other important markers to trace the disease, that is the myeloma protein, is not near. I think in our experience, in general terms, getting CT PETs and MRI covered is not always easy. You know, despite the increasing awareness and increasing evidence in the field that these studies are important. So the answer probably lies in good clinical study and good clinical evidence to show that these tests are important for monitoring and diagnosing the disease.
Thank you. Priya, I'll ask the couple of questions that I see as well. Gary asked me to ask those. So, one question that came in, and he doesn't specify if the question is for non-circulatory or secretory patients, but he says, I'm in remission and I have regular blood tests. Again, he doesn't specify what kind of blood tests. He says, are they relevant or are only portions relevant? Have they been a waste of time and money?
They certainly have not been a waste of time and money. The majority of patients will have a myeloma protein detectable at diagnosis, be it the whole M protein or the light chains. And they also very frequently have reappearance of myeloma proteins when they relapse. And monitoring of blood and urine is very important to detect relapse. So I do not think that these tests have been a waste of time. And I would encourage the patients to continue to have these tests performed.
And what if the patient were a non-secretory patient?
If the patient is a non-secretory patient, then there is obviously not much point in measuring the myeloma proteins. If the patient is non-secretory and then becoming secretory. In other words, first you cannot define any myeloma protein and the patient relapses and produces myeloma proteins. That's an extremely rare scenario, which I think we've seen only twice at our center. So for practical purposes, doing the myeloma markers in blood and urine is not necessary, but obviously you would want to monitor the blood counts, the kidney tests, and the calcium. So the other regular blood tests are of importance.
Yes. Another person asks, what's your opinion regarding the use of total body MRI for continued follow-up with non-secretory myeloma versus the use of PET CT scans for a patient who's
So regular MRI looks at distinct body parts like the spine. One can ask for the arms, the legs, the breastbone. The whole body MRI uses a different principles based on water movement, and you look at the whole body, and it also gives you some idea about activity of the myeloma. So it more resembles the PET scanning. And in fact, in some patients, for different reasons, the PET scan can be negative. On the whole body MRI, you can still find disease. What is called the whole body MRI is presently being developed at our center and other centers. We've been doing this here for several years now, and I think it needs to be prospectively compared to PET scanning and regular MRI to define its true value. Having said that, in clinical practice here, we use whole body MRIs very frequently, and they're very, very good at finding relapse early. They are useful for patients with non-secretory disease, and could be used instead of a PET scan if an insurance company is not keen on doing PET scans.
And one last question, Dr. Ray, Van Ray, came in while we were talking, and this person asked, is there a particular combination of therapies that seem to work best in non-secretory myeloma patients?
I think the same treatment that one used for so-called secretory myeloma should also be given to patients with non-secretory multiple myeloma. So I don't think that they need to have a different treatment strategy.
Yeah. Dr. Van Ray, those are all the questions I have. Priya, I don't know if there's anyone on the phone that wants to ask questions live, but I certainly appreciate all your answers, Dr. Van Ray.
I have a question, Doctor. Yeah, and it has to do with, because it's such a small number of patients, it seems like not many people would have experience with non-secretors. Do you think it's important to go to a large academic center that might see a few of those versus one that's not quite as large and has seen a lot of patients?
I think that probably applies to a lot of different diseases, particularly when it comes to interpreting what one will do with an MRT test or a PET scan. It is also important to realize that there is really a spectrum between secreting myeloma protein and not secreting the myeloma protein. There are also patients who are called, the technical term is oligosecretory or hyposecretory. So they're excreting little myeloma protein. And this is particularly an important concept when the patient has is experiencing relapse or progressive relapses, because what one can find in that scenario is that although there is some myeloma protein detectable, it's no longer reflective. It doesn't give you real information about the amount of myeloma in the body, that is the tumor burden. And if on such a patient one would do an MRI or a PET scan, one could see a large amount of disease and a relatively small amount of myeloma protein. And the myeloma protein then uses its informative value. And again, this becoming less secretory, although there's still some protein detectable, particularly occurs in patients who are experiencing repeated relapses. And there are other modalities, such as repeat bone marrow examination and imaging, become increasingly important to monitor the disease and the response to treatment. We have looked at bone disease that we can see on PET scan and sampled different areas and looked at the genetic material and the genetic makeup in different areas of the body of the myeloma can be quite different. And one can see in some patients that if you give a certain treatment, that some areas of the PET scan get better and others do not respond. So in those cases, the imaging becomes very important. So in summary, I think there is value, particularly when the disease is non-secretory, to go to a larger center where there's more experience in monitoring patients who have no myeloma protein detectable.
Okay, thank you so much, Doctor. Priya, do you have any questions online?
No, Gary, and thank you so much, Dr. Vandry. It's been a very informative discussion. We have quite a people listening to us. If you have a question that you would like to ask Dr. Vandry and or the panel, please press 1 on your keypads and we can bring you online on air to ask your question. I don't think we have any more questions. So, Dr. Vandry, thank you so much for your time. And Jack and Gary, thank you very much for your participation and your questions too. And Gary, I hope you get better soon. And
right.
This talk will be available on Cure Talks website. And we are back again on Friday with a talk on breast cancer and personalized medicine at 5 p.m. EDT. So please visit curetalks.com for upcoming talks. Thank you, everyone. Have a nice evening.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.